it just is simply freaking me out that someone else can do this for me and knows the pictures and knows who is on the picture. So Google knows who is on the picture, and God knows what else they know about my pictures, about this. So if you can, that's what freaks me out. And there is another, for instance.
May I ask, why does it freak you out?
Data privacy and how important it is for a free society. Well, today we'll learn one way how to realize that. Welcome to Inner Podcast. My name is Khalil Bauer, head of Swiss Post Innovation Lab. István Laben is my today's guest. He is founder and CEO of Trezorit. István will describe that 10 years ago, Google's face recognition of photos showed him what is really possible with data. And he realized that data privacy is an important issue for him, for hundreds of thousands of his private and business customers, and for our society. István did his Master in Computer Engineering at the University of Budapest and did research at the EPFL in Switzerland. He founded Trezorit in 2011, which was recently acquired by Swiss Post. While the common belief in data privacy was also an important reason for him to agree on that deal, he will tell you in this episode. Subscribe to Inner Podcast in your podcast app, share it along with your colleagues and friends, and now enjoy this episode with István. Hi, István. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Khalil. How are you?
I'm doing pretty fine. I'm glad that you made your way all the way from Hungary these days to the Espace Lake. I really appreciate your time. What I would like to start with is that in my research, I found out that privacy is an important issue for you. Why?
The why part, I think, is it comes deeper inside me, that people can make what happens with their data and what happens about it, the information about you, and that sort of choice, that sort of control. I found it when I started learning about privacy as a very important thing, and sort of matching with my interests and with my values. But there is no sort of particular moment in life which started. That was a realization when I first learned about privacy at the university, the legislation. As a legal topic that, I really think like that, and I really value the logic and all this behind that someone as a private person controls everything which is about that private person. So me as an individual, I can decide what happens with a picture about me. I can decide what happens my birthday in a database and all this stuff, so that I am the one who owns that data and not someone else who written that database. And that and I can decide what's going on with it. And that combining with what's going on with the data drilling companies like Facebook, where they are exposing this, that was completely on the contrary, and that for me is a big value. But I cannot connect any moments in my life, not like in cryptography. I have a story there, but it's a different story.
Okay. So before we dig deep into that. You founded Trezorit, your CEO. Probably can you explain us just in a nutshell, what is Trezorit?
When I founded Trezorit, my problem was that I wanted to upload my pictures somewhere. I did at Google Picasa back then, that they just started in beta. And I realized they are analyzing.
Does Google Picasa still exist, by the way?
I think they renamed it to Google Photos, so that they, or Photo Stream or whatever, so that They keep renaming, and they have, but the Google, some sort of Google photo backup. And I wanted to upload my pictures, party photos, family photos, and so on. And started analyzing and recognizing faces pretty accurately. And that was more than 10 years ago. And then I realized that, okay, this is something which I don't want, you know, it's analyzing, so that the knowledge or the capability of Google technology 10 years ago was ready to tell me who is on a picture and who is not. And they all knew that. And they didn't, so that I just wanted to back up my photos. I wanted to use it and didn't want to lose it. So I was thinking, okay, this is not good. I want a service where I want to limit anyone to access or analyze the data while I upload. So it's not just not having a service which doesn't analyze, but I want to create a service where it's technically impossible that the service provider can do analysis on it. So Trezorit is basically the name, is Italian name, is a Trezor. It's the German Trezor, where it's with it, is it like put it into the strong walls. So that put there in this Trezor and lock it, that no one else can access. Even the bank employees, when you're renting a Trezor in a bank, you can put things inside that and the employees cannot get access to that. It's there, but they don't know what's inside. And that was the original idea. And then we realized it's usually much more relevant for business cases. So what we are doing is right now is end-to-end encrypted. This is the technology we use to have this promise. End-to-end encrypted cloud storage and file transfer. So basically, when you would like to store your files, transfer your files, transfer a message to another business, but you want to make sure that no one else on earth, no Trezor employee or anyone else, cannot get access to the information, then our services is ready to serve you. If you don't care, that's not Trezor.
I understand that. So you already described this example from Google Picasa in the early days. Now it's something else, but somehow, like, let's just call it the general Google Drive thing, yeah, where you can upload your data. So I can understand that you may say, hey, I don't want them to work on this data. But on the other hand, Google provides quite some value and quite some information for me, because, for example, I don't have to order my pictures.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to put a directory with, this is the pictures of me, this is the pictures of my dad, this picture of my friends and my mom and my... So I don't have to do that, because I can ask just Google, please show me the pictures of my family, and it will show me. So this is something which is okay, and now we can use it also for other informations, whatever I have, probably business related. Why did you decide that I don't want this analysis? Why was that such an issue?
It wasn't about the analysis. So the feature of face recognition and this is good. It just is simply freaking me out that someone else can do this for me and knows the pictures and knows who is on the picture. So Google knows who is on the picture, and God knows what else they know about my pictures, about this. So if you can, that's what freaks me out. And there is another, for instance.
May I ask, why does it freak you out?
Because when it comes to, I don't know, the social dilemma, the we're jumping ahead. There is a movie on Netflix, A Social Dilemma, and it talks about how social networks can brainwash you. It is because they know every step of you, and basically they know your private life, and then they can control or show things in a way that will change your behavior in the best way. So that this information is a so big power, which is can imprison your mind at the end of the day. I don't know, are you familiar with the concept of panopticon?
I am not.
So it is in the 19th century, some philosophers and designer or architect came up with this concept of panopticon. This is a cylinder. Mm-hmm. Prison, so that the inmates are the multiple layers, and there is a tower in the middle, and in the tower there is one watchman, there is one guard, but the inmates they don't see the guard. Because the guard is behind the mirrors or a small there's just a small hole where looking out, but the guard can see every step of the person in the cell, whether he or she is doing something bad or something like that, and that thing that knowing you could be watched at any time has a psychological effect on your mind, has a psychological effect on the inmates, because I might be punished for this, I might be punished for this and that. So that already changing the behavior by knowing the fact you could be watched. And that is what we are building right now. That if you look at these giants, they're analyzing your text messages, they're analyzing your pictures, they're analyzing everything about you, and you know that. That is a modern prison of minds, modern prison of society. Because then you change your behavior already, and that is not good. When it comes to social sort of freedom of thoughts, that is not good. Don't take me wrong, not like illegal stuff, but it's something similar to, you know, when you go to the shower, there are things other people don't want to see. And then if you go to the shower, you close a curtain close a door, not because you have some illegal stuff there to do, but you want to have some privacy. Maybe singing or doing other stuff, but the simple fact that you know that you can be watched might change your behavior, and that is basically less of a freedom, and that that is getting back. So that not the fact that being analyzed, my photos are being analyzed, but that someone could access that information, what is coming out, and having the power to analyze my pictures is my problem. In some business environments, this is not a sort of a philosophical question. I'll just give you an example, one of our customers. They are, Germany is one of largest publicly listed company. And the board, they are, they look at the pre-earnings data, the financial data, which hasn't been published, but can, change the way how investors look at the company. This is a $100 billion plus capitalization company. You can imagine that how much it's worth to know a couple of days earlier was their latest financials. It's not a simple information, and if it's analyzed and it gets into the wrong hands, it can worth billions. And that information needs to be protected with the highest level. or I can talk more about these sort of super confidential things, that, but the problem is most of the, even the use cases are confidential.
Which, nevertheless, I will try to ask it a little bit and figure out if you can tell us a little bit more. But I have a good overview. I understood that actually that someone outside, I don't know, who is not analyzing my data, who is not in charge of using my data. And the picture you chose from this philosophical book theory approach with this prison and the guard, I understand this example very well. So if you have the feeling that you always get observed, you obviously will start to change your behavior, which is basically the very first step to a society I think we both don't want to live in.
Yep.
And so this I understand perfectly, and then it makes sense to work on something which does not allow this kind of usage of data and which only allows me or everybody who listens to us to be in control on our own data. Probably if you think to the very beginning, can you probably at least describe a little bit what was the first kind of use case which really led to founding Trezorit?
It was the first use case. We wanted to store or encrypt our own pictures. That was the simple, like when we were students back then, engineering students.
When did you realize that when you started to do that and work on that, when did you realize, okay, this might be something really big?
I started this as a research project. So that I was always wanted to get into cryptography. And I went to the engineering university to that learning about cryptography with that mindset. And I was attending to some of the classes, and I went to after a few classes, I went to the professor that, oh, I have an idea, and I described to him that okay, here we are learning about how to use this and that algorithms and how to store and encrypt information. But what about we do this on a remotely accessible storage? What about that? Because it's there. People are using it. You know, the online storage, and will use more. So what about encrypting that? And then we started thinking about it, and he said, okay, well, let's look into the problems. So it started as a research project. Like a student research project, which I worked on and published, and also. But before publishing, someone came at the university that, why don't you, patent it? Okay, for what? I mean, it's because if you patent it, then you can create a business out of it. And yeah, good. I'm listening. And basically, we created the patents. As they said, okay, this is a new thing at the university. We didn't do any patents, but here is this pilot. Basically, the university will pay for the patenting costs, so that you have some innovation. So let's do that. And then we wanted to make it happen, whether it's a research project or so that we didn't just wanted to write a scientific paper about it and then get published and there we go, and we move on to the next research project. I wanted to make it happen because then I was alone, and that's why I said, okay, I need some of my friends or some the people I know at the engineering school to join me, because it's getting big. I mean, it's in terms of the task is getting big. So they joined, and then we started thinking and started breaking down the problem into multiple smaller problems. And that was basically how we started formulating the team. Then we can talk about we. And we started looking into how to make it happen. And then we realized that if we just do it in the forms of a university and a research project, we'll never have enough funding to code it, to run it.
How much fund did you need by that time?
We didn't know, but we knew how much we could get, or close to nothing, as students and running a research project, and we needed much more than just barely nothing.
Like?
A couple of hundred K in as a starting point, and then who knows? I mean, it's, that was our, and it was way more what we could have ever imagined to get from the university or from scholarships and all this stuff. So it was off the roof. And then someone told us, why don't you go to VCs, venture capitalists? Okay. Why? Because they...
Going to VCs with a patent, basically.
With the patent and idea and a product idea, not just with the patent, because with a patent they will say, go... Goodbye.
That's what I thought,
yeah. But that we already started working on a plan how to make it happen. So it was the patent was just one thing. And I said, okay, why? Because VCs give money to startups to, you know, make it happen. Okay, I'm listening. Then we learned that, okay, this is we are a startup.
And when was that?
2011.
So about 10 years ago.
10 years ago. And then we founded the company. That was, I mean, we were working on this research. We got the scholarship. We came, that was back in Hungary. And then we came here to EPFL in Lausanne. Then we went back. Then we founded the company in Hungary. And we started looking for VCs. Then we realized we're up to something because that was an interest. And also we created business plans and it might give us a nice revenue at the end of the day. So that was sort of the desire or the inner motivation to make it happen, that which is valuable, which works, not just a technology, was the thing which carried on with us, with founders, because we all wanted to make it happen, and we didn't just stuck with the technology, but then we realized we need people, we need money, we need technology, we need legal, we need all the other, we need marketing. First, we didn't know what marketing is, but we learned because it was like, you know, someone told us, you need marketing in order to make it happen, okay? I'm listening. So let's learn about marketing. Then we learned about marketing. So that, but that was an important thing. So that, the goal was make it happen, make it something which is there and brings value. So it was not with the goal of creating a huge wealth. It was a goal of creating something which is valuable, and by the way, can create wealth.
When we move one step further and look a little bit more in detail in terms of it, you described a lot what it actually can do, at least in terms of privacy. What I found out that on your webpage, you describe Trezorit as an ultra secure storage. So for people who are basically not trained in cryptography, in data security, so basically people like me, what does exactly this mean, ultra secure?
Yeah, I explained this metaphor of the Trezor in the bank type of thing. And I can go into the cryptographical parts and how that works, but maybe I would explain from the proof That's what we did. And this was actually what put us on the radar. We said that we give $50,000 to anyone who can hack us, and we open up our servers, give admin right to the hackers, and still give $50,000 to anyone who can get information out of the system.
And so that, you invited basically the whole world to attack you?
Yep. And
when did you do that? In the beginning?
It was in the beginning of 2013. So that was our, that was not the first, but that was a second campaign to go to market. And it was pretty successful. We had in a week a 200 times increase in a week. And we had CNN articles, and people started realizing there's a service like that. But the campaign was, or the idea was, that we have put this bounty on our own head, and we invite everyone, and that the sort of arrogancy will journalists will like, and that was in CNN. Look at those little guys; they will be hacked in no time. And a couple of years later, we could still say that no one hacked, no one ever got close, but 250 universities and thousands of hacker teams registered and failed in this contest. They're like Stanford, MIT teams, and all of the, they are on the list, and they said, it's impossible. It's impossible to do, because the way it is structured and it is way how it's designed, there is no way to hack it, because you guys, Treasury, we don't have access. So the Treasury doesn't have access to the key at any point, the encryption key at any point of storing the information. So that basically you need to attack or break encryption, which is considered to be unbreakable, which we didn't invent. I mean, we invented the key management and the architecture, but not the encryption algorithm, which was very well known. It's hard to break, or no one can break. Let's put it this way.
Who invented this one?
That was standardized. Some Danish scientists, but standardized in the US, and it's used everywhere in the world. So it's it doesn't necessarily mean it, called AES 256, and there are other algorithms we are using, but these are the standards which is used when you are go e-banking, when you are using your phone, it's everywhere. So that was to explain to you, if in a simple way, no one else can claim that, or just a few companies on Earth can do the same. But they are having this type of technology or similar technology. The ones like Google or Dropbox, they cannot do such a campaign, because then they would fail and need to pay money.
And it's also not part of their business model. At least in my mind, it's not the premise of we will do everything to protect your data, because obviously I don't pay Google or Dropbox. Well, not in my plans. I don't pay them, so I don't expect them to protect my files. At least don't delete them on purpose.
Yeah, well, there are bad and worse services in this sense. So that, for instance, Google you're paying with your data. You are not a customer. You are a livestock on their shelves. So they are selling you and your data. But Dropbox business model is for instance, it's not that bad. They want to protect your information, so that because they are not living on advertising dollars. But their business model is all around usability and ease of use. So ease of use comes first, and then security. For us, it's the other way around. Security comes first, and then usability. The difference sounds small, but it's actually substantial, because they are making sacrifices on security. We're making sacrifices on usability. And that is you can see it in the picture or in the product. Both sort of both type of companies are try to converge in both and making hard efforts to make it more secure, making and more usable. And we invest a lot in usability and try to overcome the limitation what comes with an encrypted platform. But it's much harder than for the ones which didn't choose this type of encryption.
Since we already talked about it, can you describe what exactly or how does your business model work?
So we are basically we have this try and buy business model, which means that you can try out our service for free, but it's for free for a time period, the trial period. And after that, you can choose whether you pay or not pay for the product. If you like, you can pay. If you don't like, then you don't need to. I mean, it's that's simple.
The trial period is
for 14 days. And that is, we had the different time periods, but what we realized that usually people try out in the first couple of days. So it's 14 days seems to be long enough for making decision.
And when you think about that, who are actually the people who uses Trezor? So you mentioned this one public listed company in Germany using Trezor for the board of this company, public listed company, uses Trezor for the quarterly or annual numbers before it goes public. What other use cases, as far as you know, of course, but why do people actually use the solution?
I'll give you another example. I can name it. It's Köln-Bonn Airport. So that it's we're talking about an airport, and they are, as an airport, they are...
Köln-Bonn
Airport.
So in Cologne.
Yes,
Germany.
Yeah. All right, yeah. So that what they are doing, they are managing a lot of contractors, a lot of companies who are delivering service to the airport, and really big network for this. And most of their job is about coordinating those contractors. And when it comes to communicating with them, the regulation, I mean, obviously, airline secrecy regulation. So everything needs to be confidential. Cannot get access to the information or third party. Just imagine a simple cleaning schedule might be confidential. I mean, it's like, who's the cleaning lady? I don't know exactly what they share with, but what I know that they are using it with their partners. But the constraint was that they needed to have an encrypted communication with partners, but the partners, well, they didn't want that the partners install any software or start using software. So that's why our technology, which is easy to use even with a browser, that help them a lot to streamline information to the airports and not requiring any sort of installation on their partner side, so that it is easy to use for them. For the partner, it's just a browser page and that's it. So for them is collecting the documents, sending out documents, contracts, and so on. That's, for instance, another use case, and it is coming from the regulation.
To put a little bit numbers on that, so about how many companies, customers, licenses are we talking about?
We have more than 10,000 businesses, companies with, might be a publicly listed company or also some, you know, a mid-sized law firm or a single or a smaller law firm, and also a couple of 100,000 private individuals as users.
And how much revenue do you usually generate, I don't know, in the beginning, for the last couple of years, or also probably in the future?
I cannot tell those information. We're a private company, just recently acquired, so that this information I cannot give.
Is it like tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions?
It's on the tens. Okay. Or the 10, let's put this, now the 10, that's the range, so.
All right, that's, then I leave you with that. So you already mentioned that you've been acquired and by Swiss Post, which I already mentioned in the introduction. What's the plan for the next couple of months and years with Swiss Post and Trezorit?
We have a vision. We have a vision that Nicole Bortha, the CEO of KS, she shared with me when we had the initial discussion. And that mission vision I liked very much. That was that bringing back the letter secrecy to the digital world, so that what letter secrecy at the as a regulation for post is, we need to bring it back in the digital world. And this is what we are doing. This is what we are standing up for from the very beginning. And I said, okay, I like that. And it was, for us, it was always important to show our customers that we are really committed to deliver what we are doing, this encryption. We put it in their terms of use. We're running audits, third-party auditors, looking into our source code, looking into our processes, everything, to bring in trust that we truly deliver this end-to-end encryption. We even put a bounty on our head, so that delivering this promise. But at the end of the day, we always came back to, okay, then if we don't deliver, then they could sue us. Like a civil court case and ask for damages. But now this is what we're joking around. I'm not a lawyer, I don't know, but we could send to prison if we don't follow that, because as a post, there is a requirement of confidentiality, letter secrecy, which is not civil code. It's beyond that. So it's and that sort of promise and that sort of philosophy, which we wanted, because we wanted to give to our customers. And that was a very important part in the vision, that, okay, we are building something where, as I mentioned in the beginning, in this part of the journey, this is the next step. We can take the Trezorit to the next stage with partnering with a like-minded organization.
Let me summarize it a little bit. So what I understood so far is what makes Trezorit, so as far as I understood, what makes it so special is that you have a solution where you can store your data, and which what you already mentioned with us, absolutely so far not a chance to hack it. So you're invited universities from all over the world and hackers from all over the world, you put on the bounty on your own head, and a lot of people, thousands of people, were not really able to hack that.
Not absolutely not able to. Not like not really. Absolutely not.
All right. Thanks. So. Thanks for this correction. This is probably a very important one. What I also understood is that if I want to try this, if I want to use the service, I have a 14 days of trial, and if I like it, I can continue.
Yep.
And if I don't like it, I just don't use it anymore. What I understood is you have more than 10,000 businesses worldwide using this solution? You mentioned a few examples.
Not using, there are or customers. So there are much more who are using because they're free, freebie and trial and all this stuff. So these are the ones who are paying businesses who are every.
And then I understood also there few hundred thousand, 200, more than 200,000 private
individuals,
who are using that worldwide as well. And you already also mentioned that you partnered up with Swiss Post in July, which is basically a good match for both sides, is that what Nicole Burt said, who is a member of the executive board of Swiss Post and leading communication services, this department, she mentioned in the first, what you told us in the first initial discussion, that she wants to try to bring the letter privacy in the digital world. And this is something which, well, as far as I could see, which opened your eyes and said, yep, that's something we want to work as well, and we want to join and partner up. And that's what you're currently working on. I would like to go through the end and have prepared three final questions for you. The first one is, how do you increase your personal privacy?
Well,
quick question.
I was in kind of first million users of Facebook, so I'm pretty early, and I deleted myself.
When did you do that?
I think 2018, 2017. Don't remember exactly when I deleted myself. But anyway, so I a couple of years ago. But it might not be the right choice. It might be a too brutal way of because Facebook is anyway collecting a lot of data about me. Through my friends and through other people, so I try to do that. The most important thing that when you are using a data hungry company's software, now regulation requires that they need to provide you options to opt out at least. So opt out. So go there. And the privacy settings, which they deliberately hide as much as possible, and try to click on, no, I don't want targeted ads, I don't want this. And they will tell you, oh, why don't you go out, we can personalize you, all this stuff. No.
Which messenger apps do you use?
Depends. I have Signal, I have Threema. But
you don't have WhatsApp, do you?
I have WhatsApp. I didn't delete that account because I had another before they was acquired. But they are having end-to-end encryption, sort of good. They're try to break it nowadays. But I use iMessage. Sometimes I use simple text message. Believe it or not, I mean it's like. My friends are laughing at me, like you are a tech person and you are keep sending me text messages. Why? And I said, well, the telcos in Europe, they don't analyze my text message. Others do.
I see. Last one. At the Espos Lab entrance, we reserved some space for you. Which quote may we note there?
I chose before we got here. You asked me to choose one, so I that was JFK's speech about the moon landing, and it sounds like we choose to go to the moon in this decade to do and to do other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. And I chose this because when it comes to end-to-end encryption. We chose end-to-end encryption not because it's easy, because it's hard. We chose this path because we know if we didn't choose no one else would have chosen this. No one else would have sorted out the technological hurdles coming with this and providing the value at the end of it and creating the result at the end of it. And that is something resonating. So we are, and we feel at Treasury that we are building the next moon landing, because this territory, when it comes to encryption, we are on a truly new area where no one was before.
We chose to go to the moon in this decade and do other things, not because it's easy, but because they are hard. István Lám, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.